Tara gets a kick out of my, feel free to wave your hand.
Your lack of competency.
Close that work session. Open a work session on Senate Bill 292. We've heard this bill before, members. Lizbeth can update us on this extension of the computer donation tax credit.
Mr. Chairman, basically all I did was, after listening to the testimony from the last meeting, I did adjust these revenue impacts just due to the discussions from the university administrators about their pursuing and soliciting these contributions for Oregon corporations. And this really does depend on, you know, the amount of corporations' donations in prior years of the computer and scientific equipment, and then also the university's efforts in seeking out these contributions from Oregon corporations. So when we're extending the sunset now on this corporate excise tax credit, is extended for 6 years from January 1st, 2004 to January 1st, 2010. It will reduce general fund revenue by $100,000 in fiscal year 2004-05 and then $200,000 in the 05-07 biennium.
We are in work session.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
There's no amendments.
No amendments. It's Senator Farabelli's bill. Was he in?
Yeah, he's still in caucus.
He's still in caucus.
Yeah,
were you guys arguing again, Senator Starr?
I'd move Senate Bill 292 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 292 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Do we have any objection?
Mr. Chair, I'll be a yes to get it out of committee, but I reserve the right to vote no on the floor. I think that we're putting the cart in front of the horses with these without knowing what the revenue picture looks like to be doing these tax credits.
Thank you. Appreciate the reservation of the right to differ on the floor.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Just to point out that these are tax credits that's saving our public institutions tons and tons of money, and it's just a fraction of the value that they donate.
I thought that was the most compelling part of our first hearing was the 90% savings that you get from purchasing the equipment. So I think it's, in my opinion, a win-win. Anything further? Tara, please call the roll.
Aye.
Aye. Bill carries, and Senator Farioli will carry the bill on the floor. If you're here for Senate Bill 747, we are not going to do 747 today. We will do it, so it'll be back on the agenda tomorrow at 1. We are going for a world record of how many days consecutively we might be able to schedule the same bill.
So we just freed up Mr. Marquis' afternoon. He's got to be appreciative.
Open. We just got work session on 313. Open the work session on Senate Bill 313. Mr. Warner.
Mr. Chair, Senate Bill 313, you have a dash three amendments before you. And those are designed to do several things that you discussed in your previous meeting. What 313-1s did was to completely change the original Senate Bill 313 and establish a tax credit and Oregon Production Investment Fund. It was really a combination of Senate Bill 79, which had been initially an allocation of lottery funds to the film and video office into this film and, investment fund. The new dash threes do three things that are different from the dash ones. The dash twos ended up being subsumed into the dash threes. First of all, on page two, section 7B there, lines 8 through 15, it converts it into the tax credit into a carry forward up to 3 years. There was no carry forward provisions in the original amendment, so now you have a 3-year carry forward for the credit. If there's no liability in the first year, then it can be carried forward in the second and so on to the third year. The second amendment is section 5, which begins on the very last line of page 2, and that has creates the Oregon Production Investment Fund, and what it does is establish the fund as separate from the general fund and allows the fund to accept donations into the fund that are as a result of selling the tax credits, but can be any type of donations, interest earned by the fund. So it establishes the funds whether there's any revenue flow going into it or not. So it establishes the fund as a separate identity. I know the Film and Video Office has some concerns about that being a bit too narrow in terms of what can be accepted into the fund. And then on page 4, line 29, there was some concern that in the original amendment that it had referred to a tax credit marketer, which may have been a little bit too narrow. Marketers do multiple kinds of things, tax credit being one of them. So this gives it a little broader and allows more, potentially more, respondents to an RFP.
Senator Metzger, Veronica, do you want to update us on this bill and let us know what the decision on Senate Bill 79 was? You're kidding me. You're not going to come and...
I'm here for moral support.
Thank you.
Well, that's very moral of you.
Thank you. They're the smart people, they can talk.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Veronica Reinert. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Film and Video Office. We decided after much back and forth and consulting with people and doing a lot of research that Senate Bill 313 with the tax credit allocation at this time was the way to go, given the limited amount of lottery dollars and the numbers of people competing for them, including myself for my office budget. So we felt like this was a way to still be able to create the fund, to still be able to create the program, but to not be asking for actual hard dollars up front. One of the some of the advantages to going this route are that the impacts on the revenue stream will be put off and conceivably would sort of be happening at the same time as the increased revenue from the work workers on the film and video productions, as well as increased work created in other sectors of the economy, the increased people put on it, hotels, motels, that sort of thing, increased work at different suppliers, that sort of thing. So we sort of felt like it kind of equaled out the time when the revenue impacts would be felt both on a positive and negative scale. One of the things that I have included in my testimony is an evaluation of what kind of returns we could expect given different levels of funding. When I was before you last week, one of the things that we talked about was the potential need to discount the tax credits. That all depends very much on what Dexter was talking about as far as the federal ruling in the child care division issue. If that comes back positively, the need to discount is pretty minimal. So we would have conceivably be able to put close to $2 million in the fund from the tax credits. But I've included some lower numbers in case that we do end up needing to discount the tax credits and what happens to the returns on that. There are two different evaluations there because basically different economists look at this differently. And so I've included both the evaluation from Echo Northwest and an evaluation from Willamette University, who looked at the Oregon Production Investment Fund very early on and made some calculations as to what they saw the impacts were. The Echo Northwest assumes a higher per show average spending, but also includes a lower multiplier rate. The Willamette University study assumes the minimum amount of spending that this production fund could bring in, but assumes a higher multiplier rate. If I had wanted to paint the rosiest picture I could, I would have taken the higher production spending and the higher multiplier rate and, you know, come up with the top numbers that I could. But I really wanted to try to be as logical about it as I could, put out the best numbers and the most predictable numbers and the ones that we actually could live up to. So those are two different takes on that. One of the things that I don't think that I covered before was that the impacts on revenues that we can count are those revenues brought in by the out-of-state productions that would be brought in with this production. or with this program, but the revenues that are harder to put a finger on but definitely would be felt are the revenues from the indigenous industry and the support services that are shored up and able to exist because of this additional work that we bring in. There's an interdependence between our indigenous industry, which does about $450 million worth of business per year, and these out-of-state productions. The out-of-state productions provide kind of the critical mass of work that keeps our infrastructure here. It keeps our crews here in the state instead of looking elsewhere for work. It supports the companies like the Griffin Lighting Houses, the camera rentals, the catering companies, and the casting companies that supply services. In turn, that production infrastructure is then here to support the indigenous film and video industry, which provides services to advertising agencies, the corporations, the retail market. So if we don't have enough production to keep all the support services here, then we will erode our indigenous industry, and in turn that will have impacts on the other sectors of the economy. The dollars they spend on production will start to go out of state. So it's a larger impact than just the hard dollars from the out-of-state productions that are listed here, but those are the ones that we can put our finger on and really point to and say that's what this brought in. So it's a larger industry-wide and even community-wide impact. I also have with me today Megan Ratzow, who is a casting director from Portland, and I wanted her to give you a little information from an industry business owner point of view about why this kind of program is necessary.
Mr. Chair, Senators, just because I'm a casting director and work in the entertainment industry doesn't mean I'm comfortable speaking in front of people, so just be indulgent. I have a statement I'd like to read for you. My name is Megan Ratzow, and I have been a casting director in Portland, Oregon since January of 1991. I relocated here from Los Angeles, having worked there successfully for more than a decade as an agent and casting assistant. Since 1991, I have cast more than 30 feature films and movies of the week here in Oregon. While that might sound like a lot, there have been years of feast and years of famine. During those times, I have had the pleasure of working with hundreds of Oregon crew people and actors, as well as numerous out-of-state producers, directors, agents, and casting directors. Many of us in the business have dedicated ourselves to working for the continued success of the film and entertainment industry in the state of Oregon. This ongoing struggle predates me, as the entertainment industry here has spent the last two decades trying to establish itself as the place to go in the Northwest to film. For a time in the early 1990s, it did indeed seem that we were well on our way to becoming the Hollywood up north. It was about this time that Vancouver, BC realized the enormous economic benefits of show business and successfully put incentives in place to lure American films and series. Vancouver, however, did experience a scare in the late 1990s when Hearst Entertainment and Lifetime Cable left there and came to Oregon with numerous MOWs. The reason for the change was simple. The local industry professionals and union crews worked out a tiered pay scale that was very competitive. When executive producers, who are the money people behind the films, saw that they could shoot in the States at a competitive cost, they were happy to do so. It always comes down to the money. This brings me to the TV series Kingdom Hospital, whose producers, as we speak, are deciding whether to film their 15 episodes here or in Vancouver. The major points of contention are these: budget differential and local talent pool. I have spent the last 2 weeks convincing them that our local actors are not only incredibly talented and professional, but easily sufficient in numbers to people their project. This one series would employ literally hundreds of crew, actors, and extras during a period starting in mid-July 2003 to March 2004. I will not speak to the budget differential because I am not an economist, nor do I know anything about currency exchange. I do, however, know about actors. After working in L.A., I was not only pleasantly surprised but overwhelmed by the ability and sheer talent of the hundreds of local actors here, not only in Portland but in other areas of the state like Eugene, Medford, Bend, and Ashland, to name a few. I have had directors and L.A.-based stars compliment me on the professionalism of the Oregon actor. One leading man told me he has never worked with actors as professional on any other location shoot. I also need to mention the hundreds of talented production people who live here in Oregon. On every film shot here that I have had been privileged to work on, the overwhelming sentiment of the out-of-town producers and directors is that Oregon crews take a backseat to no one. Their professionalism, work ethic, training, and preponderance to giving 150% make them highly desirable. Herein lies the dilemma. We have literally hundreds and hundreds of industry professionals and actors in the state who not only want but need to work. Should feature and network films, cable movies of the week, and series like Kingdom Hospital continue to ignore Oregon for greener pastures, it is my fear that these talented, hardworking individuals will eventually and inevitably move out of state. It would be difficult, if not impossible, to convince filmmakers to come here with insufficient crew and talent pool. After 20 years of building a talent and crew base that is a source of pride and envy to many other states, we would be back to step one. The possibility of luring the lucrative entertainment industry back here would be lost for a very long time. In a depressed economy, the one thing that has been a constant is people's desire for entertainment to relieve them of their day-to-day problems. This is certainly true during the Great Depression and World War II, and is still true today. The entertainment industry remains alive and well despite the economic lows. We have only to cut a few pieces of the big pie and bring it here to the state for ourselves. Please be assured, executive producers do want to keep American projects in the U.S., but like any company, cost efficiency and profits are critical. City and states and even countries give tax incentives and perks to companies all the time to set up shop. Sometimes the financial rewards for these companies take years to be seen. The price tag for luring film projects to Oregon could be seen as minor, considering that the positive financial impact is immediate. Again, producers want to film here in Oregon. They only need to see good, economically feasible reasons to do so.
Thank you very much. Appreciate questions. Senator Metzger, did you want to moral support?
I think they did an excellent job.
Any questions? So 79, the direct expenditure is now off the chart. So you're going to have an amendment to 313. The only, I guess, concern I would have is timing. We only have a couple days left, so I would just... we can reschedule this for Monday and then work the committee on the floor for the votes.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Thank you.
I didn't think Metzger did a very good job.
Very understated performance.
It was very understated.
Which is very unusual.
Miscast. Terrible case of miscasting.
Yeah, miscast as a senator. That's
anyone else? Not on 313. Close the work session on 313. 79 is now, you can take that off your list of bills to review. 292 has moved to the floor. What they do pass.
And you're carrying.
And an excellent carrier, I understand, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, we do have that. And we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2213. Dr. Yates, we haven't had your presence here in a few days.
Dr. Yates.
Yeah, and the clouds were just lifting.
Doctor.
Give me the news.
We got a bad case of rhythm and blues. Fix it, man.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Richard Yates with Legislative Revenue. House Bill 2213 allows the Treasury to issue grant anticipation revenue bonds to finance transportation projects that are eligible to receive federal funding. It specifies the procedures for issuing the bonds and cleans up the statutes relating to highway user bonds, highway user tax bonds, infrastructure bonds, and short-term borrowing. Increases the limit on short-term borrowing from $25 million to $100 million. Eliminates ODOT's statutory general obligation bond limit and changes maturity terms limit for the highway user tax bonds from 30 years to the expected life of the facility being constructed. Carries an emergency clause and takes effect upon passage.
Thank you. Mr. Tyler, good to have you in the Revenue Committee.
I knew you'd find somebody that knew what this bill did.
And with him, we have another special guest. Now, did you make it to Augusta this year for the Masters?
Did not make it this year, Senator.
You guys aren't actuaries, are you?
And we're not movie directors either.
And you're not movie directors. I'm more worried about you being actuaries.
Afternoon.
Chair Deckard, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Dave Tyler. I'm the Chief Financial Officer for the Oregon Department of Transportation. I'm not an actuary. And with me is Douglas Goh, who is a partner in the bond counsel firm of Orrick, Harrington, and Sutcliffe. And we're here to spend a few minutes and talk with you about House Bill 2213. This bill has been in the works at ODOT for several biennia, but the cleanup of the bonding statutes weren't really a high priority when ODOT was not issuing any highway user tax revenue bonds. We now have an OTIA program, and what we wanted to do was get the pledge authority and all the declarations into order so we could move forward. This bill has the support of Chuck Smith, the Director of Debt Management in the Treasurer's Office. He's here with us. This bill really is primarily housekeeping.
I don't see Chuck, but...
Chuck couldn't be here today. Spirit.
Oh, he's in. Okay.
He didn't make it to the committee meetings on the House side either, but I think that's a show of confidence in our abilities.
That's fair, yes.
Thank you, sir. There are really four substantive changes that House Bill 2213 will enact. And some of these you heard about last week in a hearing on the public-private partnership bill with Jim Whitty. And the first substantive change is within sections 2 through 10, and those sections would authorize ODOT to issue grant anticipation revenue vehicle bonds, or GARVEs. Similar legislation was introduced in the 2001 session by Senator George, but the bill did not move forward. This is just an additional vehicle we can use in our bonding program to improve Oregon's roads and bridges.
So my understanding of the Garvey bonds is the objections to them are it's just not a very good deal. It's been what I've certainly understood last session.
Chair Deckard, that's right. Our highway user tax revenue bonds are a better credit. They are much better received in the financing market. Garvey's, because of the reauthorization period, we can go longer term with pledged highway fund revenues, a dedicated pledge, but the federal funds come for shorter authorization periods, so we can't go for as long a term, and there is more uncertainty over that credit, so you pay a premium in terms of a higher interest rate when you issue those bonds.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ringo.
Just so I understand this better, the Garvey bonds are backed by federal funds. Under the federal Department of Transportation budget?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ringo, that's correct. They are backed by the future federal funds that come to ODOT.
And what is the – how much money do we get from the feds that are subject to Garvey bonding?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ringo, we receive over a biennium approximately $300 million, I believe, over a 24-month.
Okay. And so, if we're not using those funds right now for bonding, I assume we just spend the stream of revenue. Is that right?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ringo, that's correct. But what bonding those funds allows you to do is advance projects quicker and get them built and on. Get the projects open so they can be used by Oregon citizens. It just advances the ability to do the construction.
Yeah, I understand that. But, Mr. Chair, just to follow up, I guess before I ran for the legislature, I was always told that we didn't go into debt. And then now that I'm here, I see we go into debt all over the place in all kinds of ways. And I think sometimes it's prudent, and obviously here we're talking about capital projects that you can justify. But I'm wondering... why, given the added costs of Garvey bonds, why it might not make more sense in the long run just to live off the stream of revenue, and whether in the long run we would have more transportation projects done. Although we may not have them done next year, in the long run it's the better way to go.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ringo, that's the way ODOT has traditionally operated. We had not issued a new issue of bonds until the 1999 legislature authorized some local street bonds. Prior to that, the last new money issue was back in 1974.
Mm-hmm.
We've lived off our current revenues, but many of the projects that we need to do in terms of modernization and the bridge issue we have right now with many cracked, failing bridges, we don't receive enough money through a biennial period to be able to move those projects forward on a pay-as-you-go basis.
Yeah.
And many times the inflationary costs of construction itself over the years adds a greater burden cost-wise than actually paying the interest to bondowners on a tax-exempt issue. Our OTIA, the first issue of OTIA bonds we did in May of 2002 was done at a rate slightly less than 5% for a 25-year period.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, to stay on that, because we did OTIA, you know, we did it in 99, then we did OTIA, and now we're contemplating another round of OTIA-esque. I think we'll have before us a similar type package where all of the revenue stream is bonded. And I guess in the back of my head, I have that same concern is, have we switched, made a fundamental switch, which we've done in the legislature on just about every front, transportation would just be one of them, from actually paying for projects as we go to a real sea change in terms of our policy into a bonding scheme, which really sacrifices future revenues down the road. And I don't know if that's a concern that Mr. Goh, you have, or Dave, or...
Chair Deckard, committee, let me start for just a second. It is a fundamental policy shift, but we have a great deal of protection, in our bond covenants and restrictions, in that we must have 3x coverage in terms of debt service. So we have to have $3 within the highway fund pledged revenues for every dollar we spend in debt service, principal and interest. So we not only have protection for the bond owners, and that's something that the rating agencies and the investment market clearly look at when we go into any kind of an issue, but we're also trying to preserve the ability to move projects ahead on a pay-as-you-go basis as well. Clearly, the magnitude of the program that's being discussed in terms of the need for Oregon's bridges is significant, and additional revenues would be needed to make sure we stay below that 3x coverage on the debt service.
Chair Deckard, members of the committee, Doug Goh with Orrick Harrington. I think that the chair raises, you know, an important issue, but I think, as Mr. Tyler has indicated, you are not, even if not trying to presume what may be coming in terms of a new package, but let's say that a significant package goes forward. Even under that situation, you still are going to have a significant amount of revenues that will continue to be on a pay-as-you-go basis. We just have been in the last month at a 40-year historic lows in terms of interest rate. You're talking about, when it comes to bridge projects, 50 to 100-year useful life projects. So in terms of a time that you would look at bonding, now is the time from the financial markets. I think another thing for the record that I think it's important that the committee know is that the ODOT's Highway User Tax Bond Program is the highest rated bond program in the state, even higher, now rated a couple notches higher than the state's general obligation bond program. It is a very well-designed, well-structured program, and as Mr. Tyler has indicated, there are mechanisms that, frankly, are driven by the market and by the rating agencies that indicate that you can't spend all your money on debt service. The very, very good questions. And if I may address the Garvey question, As long as you have lots of capacity, currently the federal revenues are not pledged revenues to the highway user tax bonds. So that is not a, in fact, they are just being, those revenues are being used on a pay-as-you-go basis. This would give another tool, and as I, Mr. Tyler can address this more directly, right now, given that you still have capacity on the highway user tax bond side, I think it would be the department's intention to continue to use that as your vehicle, because that's your most efficient vehicle. But it may be, depending on what comes out of the current proposals, that the capacity there is much reduced. This would be an additional revenue source that could be leveraged through the Garveys. A couple other observations. This is just, all this bill does is gives the department and the state the legal authority to issue these. It does not, for ODOT to issue these bonds, they would need to come back to a subsequent legislature and ask to be in the so-called biennial bond bill if they were to issue Garveys. In addition, obviously the state treasurer is always the issuer of all state debt, and he would have to make the judgment as well that that would be the best use of the state's debt capacity. So I think this was intended to be giving the ODOT another tool in the toolbox, but really not for current use, but for future use, to make sure that we had that. The major thrust of this bill, as Mr. Tyler has indicated, is really to clean up, or frankly, these statutes have been around for a long, long time, and as the senators can appreciate, over time, they need to be modernized, things cleaned up. You are right, we do now have a major bond program, and we want technically to have the statutes work well for the state. And that principally is what this bill does beyond the Garvey authorization.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ringo.
How much more expensive are Garveys?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ringo. Forgive me, but it depends. It depends on the overall credit of the issuing agency. It also depends on the length of the term of the Garvey issue itself. Generally, they could be between 25 and 75 basis points higher, so it would be anywhere from a quarter to three-quarters of a percent. But it depends on the amount and the debt coverage the issuer has, as well as the ratings.
Okay.
So, and 0.75% on a $50 or $60 million issue over 10 to 12 years would be a significant cost.
Mm-hmm. And I don't have any concern in terms of the housekeeping adjustments. I guess, and Mr. Goh, you brought this up, the question of you grant the authorization to do the revenue bonds, and then the agency has to come back and get authority to actually do it. Why not just do that in one bite rather than the legislature granting the authority today and then having ODOT come back and actually utilizing the authority that we granted them? What's the rationale for?
Mr. Chair, on an ongoing authorization program, the authority for the issue comes by being included in the Department of Administrative Services annual bond limit bill. For the OTIA program last year, there was an exception to that bond limit bill written into House Bill 2142, which was the original OTIA authorization. And that gave ODOT the ability to move forward with an issue prior to this biennium. We are coming back and being included in the bond limit bill for 03-05 for the remaining OTIA authorization, and I imagine that the same approach would be used in any funding package that might come out of the legislature this biennium. So there are ways to do that, and that gives an added review and protection, both coming through this body and through the Treasurer's Office. This bill really is cleanup, but everything we do working very closely with Chuck Smith and his folks in debt management. We don't go out an issue without their blessing.
Putting aside the Garvey question for a minute, what would happen on the cleanup points if this bill didn't pass? I mean, would some bonding program grind to a halt, or, I mean, what horrible thing would happen?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ringo, a couple of things would occur. Number one, we would not have the authority to do Garvey bonds.
Understand.
Nor would we have the ability to use federal funds as a pledge of highway user tax revenue bonds. And the ability to pledge federal funds gives us additional capacity on the highway user tax side.
Is that federal dollars that gives you additional capacity to leverage federal dollars? I mean, am I reading it correctly, what you just said, to say that that would sacrifice our ability to get additional federal dollars?
Mr. Chair, no, it doesn't sacrifice the ability to get those dollars. It does sacrifice the ability for ODOT to include those in pledged revenues as a repayment source for the funds. Mm-hmm. And that change is covered in Section 24 of this bill. The other change that could have an impact right now, ODOT, any highway user tax revenue bonds issued by ODOT can't be issued for a term longer than 30 years. This proposal would give us the ability to at least consider going for a longer term, given the fact that some of the projects we might be undertaking would add 50 to 100 years of life to the infrastructure asset itself. And we work very closely with the Treasurer on that as well. There's some general obligation bond authority within this bill, as well as some short-term borrowing authority. But really, the two biggest concerns, I believe, would be the Garvey and the pledging of federal funds and the maturity term.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, if I might, I think we have generally covered the four change areas, the Garveys, the short-term borrowing within Section 18 that would allow us to borrow through the Treasurer's Office a higher limit and also extend the borrowing to a three-year term if short-term borrowing were needed and if the Treasurer's Office approved. And the third change was the general obligation bonds covered in Section 19 and then the extension of the maximum term beyond 30 years, which is covered within Section 26 of the bill. Those really are the changes that fall outside of what I would consider housekeeping. Appreciate the good questions and be happy to respond to additional questions.
I have one additional. On the lottery-backed bonds, and Doug, I don't know if you work with the Treasurer's Office on lottery-backed bonds. The general rule of thumb that we have is that around 25% is your debt capacity to do bonding, and the rest you have to allow lottery funds to fund programs currently in service. And I don't know if we have, I'm sure you work closely with the Treasurer's Office, but a similar threshold of how much bonding we can allow within OTIA and any subsequent projects that we're going to do to where you've met that threshold. And I know the bond rating agencies will help find that for you.
Chair Deckert, members of the committee, we serve as underwriters counsel on the lottery bond program and also served as counsel on the first lottery bonds issued back 10 years ago for Westside Light Rail, which was the first one that the rating agencies had ever seen. Rating agencies view lottery revenues as much more volatile and a very different revenue source than gas taxes and the monies in the highway fund. So the criteria for bonding lottery revenues is your coverage has to be much, much higher, and I think is reflected in those numbers. The three times coverage that Mr. Tyler reviewed earlier is that one of the reasons why Oregon's bonds are so highly rated is it's a very conservative test from the standpoint of the bond market would allow you to, say, do two times coverage instead of three times coverage because they view those revenues as very predictable. we have a 3x coverage, which again allows you, builds an additional cushion as a pay-as-you-go program. So there is a lot of capacity. I think the program is currently structured is very conservative. The Treasurer's Office has had great input. And again, if you read the rating agency reports on the highway user tax bond program, it is just filled with laudatory comments about the structure, the conservative nature of it, and financial management on both the Treasurer's side as well as on ODOT side.
Thank you.
Mr. Gom? Hey, can I ask one more question?
Please, yeah.
Mr. Gom, I'm wondering what, and I don't mean to be indelicate, but I want to know what your firm usually makes from a bond issuance. How does that billing work? What is your firm paid?
Chair Deckard, Senator Ringo, not an indelicate question at all. That, of course, depends on the program. For the Department of Transportation, as with all of our other state agency contracts, we are paid on an hourly basis. So unlike many bond issues where we work on a contingent basis, and there may be an incentive to make sure that bonds are issued, we do not have any built-in incentive to do that. We work on a necessarily, say, a substantially discounted rate from our regular hourly fees.
You said you do work on a substantially discounted rate?
Yes.
Why is that? You take because we're the state, or
it's because you're the state, and we're, and it's also, frankly, a program like ODOT's a very interesting program, and we think it's important to support the infrastructure of the state that we live in. So
thank you very much.
That gets PERS.
I wish.
Senator Corker.
Mr. Chair, to explain it in terms that Senator Ringo would understand, instead of chasing ambulances with the lights going, what this guy does is chases ODOT trucks with the lights. Okay.
Thank you, Senator. Appreciate that. It's a very good explanation.
Very good.
I'll share that with my partners.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Connecticut.
Well, Senator Ringo doesn't know anything. Senator Ringo, as a matter of fact, chases ambulances whose lights aren't on. He's very sophisticated.
You said that last week.
Yeah.
At least he's not attacking my Volvo, which saves me.
Oh, God. We got to bond that thing. Those little cute little windshield wipers on the lights. Oh, that's such a
cool thing. Well, I would like to move. I think we want to move this, though.
I don't think you have the votes.
Okay.
He's a no. That's what he told me.
Okay. Well, then that solves that.
Very ill. He was ragging on it. He thinks it's, it should be pay as you go. I think he's just picking some turf to fight.
Yeah, except for there's some, we need to work with the sponsors that
need to
amendments
talk to several people on this committee.
Adjourn the Senate Revenue Committee.